You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Happy New Year, everybody. And hey, a quick shout out to all the federal employees out there who aren't working and are going without pay right now. A special shout out, of course, to all the federal employees out there who are working and are going without pay right now. Like all the surprisingly cheerful TSA agents at SeaTac Airport who screened my bags and x-rayed my junk the other day. And federal employees, of course, are out of work or out of pay or both because our nuclear-armed toddler-in-chief shut down the government. The same government that, as of this recording, his party retains complete control of. They've got every single branch until January 3rd. So it would seem that no one, not even a majority of Trump's fellow Republicans, really want to pay for his fucking wall, as the former president of Mexico calls it. It's a wall that, number one, we don't need. The number of people crossing the border by land is falling and has been falling for years. And most people in the country illegally got here via plane with legal student or tourist visas that they've overstayed. And number two, Trump promised his voters that victoriously racist and racistly victorious minority of Americans who went to the polls in 2016, he promised those assholes that Mexico would pay for his fucking wall, which is why the former Mexican president felt entitled to weigh in on the subject, dropping F-bombs all over the place. And the odds that Trump will get his fucking wall, that he'll be able to stick the American taxpayer with the bill for his fucking wall, those drop off a cliff after Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats take control of the House of Representatives, which will be in, let me see, 52 hours and 36 minutes. Not that anyone's counting. Ha, who am I kidding? Everyone is counting. Anyway, Happy New Year, everybody, and goodbye and good riddance in the new year to Paul Ryan, to single party rule, and to 2018, a year in which Donald Trump lied to the American people on average 15 times a day. He lied yesterday on New Year's Eve about being at work in the Oval Office when he was not. And a big hello, a huge hello to 2019. Hello to you, Speaker Pelosi, and to you, Congresswoman AOC, and to you, Candidate Warren. Trump will continue to lie his lying face off in 2019, of course, but now there's a chance that Trump will be held accountable for the lies he's told and the children he's killed and the crimes, the other crimes, Trump and his cronies and his appointees and his despicable children have committed. Here's hoping we impeach the motherfucker already in 2019. And speaking of impeaching the motherfucker already, we made another round of donations to the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and the International Refugee Assistance Project at the end of 2018, bringing the total amount of money raised for these three great organizations through sales of ITMFA merch to $250,000. So a big thank you to everyone out there who purchased ITMFA tees and mugs and hats at ITMFA.org. And I have a feeling, I have a hunch, I have a hope and a dream and a prayer that we won't be selling ITMFA gear when 2020 rolls around. Because I am predicting here and now that the motherfucker will have been impeached by then. I guess you could say I'm feeling optimistic about the new year. I hope you guys are too. So here's to more good news, more indictments, more sex, and a whole lot less Trump in the new year. All right, coming up on the Magnum version of this week's show, the Magnum edition, twice as long, no ads, more guests, more calls. You can subscribe or give it as a gift at savagelovecast.com. On the Magnum, I speak with Sophie St. Thomas about her article in Playboy titled, "Are Some People Just Slapping the Poly Label on Their Cheating?" We get to the bottom of that one. And on both the Micro and Magnum editions, I bring in a sex toy expert to discuss the average shelf life or the average bedside table life of your above average vibrator. And now, your calls. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's ThredUp.com/savage. ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Away. Away makes first-class luggage at coach prices that allow you to charge your phone on the go. For $20 off a suitcase, go to awaytravel.com/savage and use the promo code Savage. Get yourself a great new piece of luggage and help out the Savage Lovecast again by going to awaytravel.com/savage, promo code Savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hi, Dan. I'm a young girl in the Southwest, and I have a question for you about public sex. I love it. My boyfriend and I, we like being sneaky, like I feel like a lot of people do. But we were starting to chat about it, and I was wondering what just morally might be bad public sex? Anything can be wrong and bad if you get caught, but what do you think is just like a moral limit to public sex? Obviously, nowhere near children, but would sneaking it in a city park be bad? On a beach? What would you say?
Your call reminded me of a story I read some years ago about a park in Amsterdam where gay men went to cruise and children went to swim and people went to walk their dogs. And sometimes these people would bump into each other. And rather than chase the gay men out of the park, rather than call in the cops, they put up signs indicating to people where the gay cruising areas were so that people didn't stumble into them all unawares. Things are arranged so that each group can relax in their own area without intruding on each other. A municipal spokesperson told a French newspaper, "The signs clearly indicate what is happening in each zone, also those where gay men are known to practice cruising." Now, that kind of ruins a little bit of what makes public sex arousing. Like, part of the reason why a lot of people who enjoy public sex get off on public sex is the risk, is the danger, is the naughtiness. They might get caught. Somebody might see. For some people, that is a part of what makes it sexy. And of course, if you're turned on by somebody seeing you have sex who didn't want to see you having sex, that has the potential in some instances, in some cases, for some people to alarm them, to scare them. You are really kind of involving this person in the expression of your kink against their will without their consent. And that is a problem. And that is a moral problem. You know, if your whole thing is being seen by others, then yeah, your public sex thing is morally problematic. But if what you get off on is just a little bit of risk, a little sense of danger that you might get caught, but you probably won't get caught, that somebody might see you, but really the odds are no one is going to see you. And you go into a public park late at night and you find a very dark spot where even if somebody should walk by, unless they're shining a flashlight, they're not going to know exactly what was going on. They're not going to get an eyeful. Maybe they'll get an earful. They're not going to get an eyeful. And I think that's allowed. You know, our species evolved for many, many, many millions of years before there were bedrooms with doors that we were expected to go in whenever we wanted to fuck. All sex for human beings was public sex. All sex still for most mammals and animals and birds and snakes and insects and critters and turtles is still public sex. Our thing for private sex is, what's that word that haters like to throw at the gays? Our thing for private sex is, oh, right, unnatural. Anyway, I'm kind of vamping. I'm kind of feeling this one out. If you're fucking in public because you want to be seen and you want to be seen by people that are going to be alarmed by having seen you, that's assholery. That's morally impermissible. If what you want is to have sex on a beach under the stars or sex on a mountaintop under the blue sky or sex in a public park in the dark, in the woods, in the trees, in the grass, and you make some effort not to be seen, you make some effort to find a place where you have a reasonable expectation of privacy, where the odds that someone is going to stumble over you are very, very slim. Well, that is, I believe, morally permissible. I believe that you can do that. And even if somebody should, you know, come up along that trail that you took to the top of that mountain or come over the sand dunes to the spot on the beach where you're fucking or be walking their dog through the park and get an earful, if not an eyeful, because it's the middle of the night. What have they really learned? that sex is a thing that people do, that sex exists. Well, everybody knows that. They all probably seem much worse on their phones. And when you consider what people see when they stumble over people fucking in public who've made a good faith effort not to be seen, they're not getting, you know, hot lights glistening off rectal or vaginal mucus as a dick slams in and out of an orifice. They're getting just this image of two people pressed against each other and the awareness that, oh, these two people are fucking. And I don't think it's news to anyone that fucking is something that two people sometimes do when they are in a spot where they believe themselves to be alone together and have, even if it's in a public area, a reasonable expectation of privacy. So I disagree with the people who say all public sex is problematic, all public sex is potentially violating other people's consent. Public sex, where you make an effort to be seen, public sex, which is about exhibitionism and voyeurism, where you are making voyeurs out of people who don't wish to be voyeurs, yeah, that's not okay. Public sex where you might get caught, but you probably won't, and even if you do, they're not going to see that much. I don't think that's morally problematic. I don't think that's impermissible. However, most police departments disagree with me. Now, it sounds like you're a straight couple. You're unlikely to be arrested and hauled in for public indecency. When a straight couple gets caught having sex in a public park, particularly a young straight couple, they usually get an amused police officer or officers telling them to take that home. But if it's a same-sex couple, a male couple, a gay couple, yeah, they get a trip downtown in the back of a police car. So you need to assess your unique circumstances, whether you're gay or straight, same sex, opposite sex couple. You need to assess your levels of privilege before you make that decision about having sex in public. And if you want to have morally permissible, if still slightly problematic, sex in public, you want to have sex in a public place where the public is highly unlikely to see you.
Hey, Dan, I have a question about vibrators. Over my life as a vibrator user, I've noticed that every few years my vibrators will die, like the battery will die, it'll stop working. And I always wonder, how is the best way to recycle or throw them away? Am I supposed to just throw them in the trash? Am I supposed to recycle them? Is there a special vibrator center where I can drop them off so that they can be sustainably recycled or thrown away? And then my other question is this normal? Are they supposed to die after 3 to 5 years? I feel like for the money that they cost, they should last longer, but it's been my experience that after a couple of years, they die and won't charge anymore and stop working. So do you have any recommendations for ones that will last longer and so that I won't be in this predicament in the first place?
Joining me by phone to help tackle this question, Sarah from Early to Bed, Chicago's kick-ass feminist sex shop. Hey, Sarah, how you doing?
I'm good. Hi, thanks.
Thank you for jumping on the phone. I really appreciate it. I imagine as Chicago's feminist sex shop, you sell a lot of vibrators and not a lot of real dolls.
No, we sell a lot of vibrators and just about zero real dolls. So yes, we are basically a vibrator store.
Okay, so I have a vibrator. I have a Hitachi Magic Wand that Terry and I bought 22 years ago, and it still works. And it's not like we only use it every once in a while. Like, that thing has seen a lot. That thing has been through a lot. We should start a fund for a therapy program for our vibrator. So I don't relate to this problem. It's not my experience of basically the only vibrator we've ever owned. It has lasted forever. It's the Chevy, you know, of vibrators. So is this normal for vibrators to be crapping out, for this caller's vibrators to be crapping out after 3 to 5 years?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the Hitachi Magic Wand is unique in the world in that 20 years is kind of like an average lifespan for it, if not more. I just had someone in the store this week who after 20 years, they had to replace it. But pretty much any other vibrator on the market, whether it's rechargeable or battery operated, is going to have a lifespan of, you know, a couple months if it's an inexpensive battery operated one.
Like a little bullet vibrator or something, or one of the sort of cheap plastic.
Silver bullet vibe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can, and those can't, everything can last longer than, you know, it can last for years, but one should not expect it to last many years, especially if you're spending, you know, $10, $20, $30 on a battery operated one. For rechargeable ones, you can get a couple years out of them, take care of them. You might get 5 years out of them, maybe more, but they're not going to last forever. They're not going to have the longevity of something that, like the magic wand, which is made by an appliance manufacturer, not a sex toy manufacturer.
Oh, so it's sort of like a cross between, kind of a, the Hitachi magic wand's kind of a cross between a dishwasher and a Galapagos Island turtle. Like, it's well made and it's going to live forever.
Okay, I was like, yeah, I don't know where you're going with that. But yes, no, I think you're right. It's well made. It's going to last not forever, but it's going to last a really, really long time. It will outlast, you know, a lot of relationships and marriages and children living in the home. So yeah, it's definitely the way to go. And I cannot think of another single sex toy that's going to have that longevity.
Okay. So, so we've determined that this is normal, that is normal for her vibrators to have a shelf life and a crotch life of about 3 to 5 years. So what do you do with your vibrator when it dies? Where do vibrators go after they die?
There's no great solution. There's no one that I know of in the U.S. right now who's recycling them. Anybody who was recycling them is no longer recycling them. I have spent hours on the phone calling everybody in Illinois, you know, finally trying to get them to listen to me to find a place where we could recycle them. And I finally like talked to the EPA in Illinois who had laughed at me and then were like, just throw them away. There's nothing, no one wants to recycle those. And so we have not been able to find any place to recycle them. I can't, as far as I know, your best bet is to repurpose them.
Thanks. And it's kind of sad that it's just landfills for vibrators, right?
It is. And I think it's, you know, the people who make the vibrators, I think it's unconscionable that they're creating these products and they're not providing for the recycling of them. Like if you put on your container, you know, they all say don't throw away on their boxes, and they should, if you're going to label something, don't put this in the landfill. You should make sure there's an alternative place to put it. So I find it extremely frustrating, but it is what it is.
So, you know, in answer to her second question, there isn't other vibrators, you know, she's spending a lot of money on these, but there's not like higher end vibrators that she can buy where she will avoid this problem.
I think from what I know, commercially available in my experience, there is not, you can spend as much as you possibly can on a vibrator. It's not going to mean it's going to last longer than that. There are some companies that have 5-10 year warranties. They don't necessarily mean they'll replace the vibrator. They might just give you a discount on another vibrator if your toy doesn't work, you know, in 10 years, but that's super rare. And I can't even remember off the top of my head who that is. But I think a really important thing is anybody who buys a vibrator, be sure you hold on to your receipt, register it if the company has a registry for their warranty, and take advantage of warranties through the store or the companies, because, you know, you can't get your vibrator replaced with 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 year warranty. So it's good to just know that that's an option for most rechargeable vibrators.
Sarah from Early to Bed, Chicago's feminist sex shop, thank you so much for jumping on the phone. That was very clarifying.
I will be happy to do any time. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too, Sarah. Thanks. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp. ThredUp is the largest online consignment and thrift store where you can shop for high quality pieces at up to 90% off estimated retail. They have over 35,000 brands ranging from Gap to Gucci. You can find a Coach purse for $10, Anthropologie dress for $6, and Lululemon tanks for $10. Plus, if you go to thredup.com/savage today, you will get an extra 30% off your first order. Instead of digging through clothing racks, ThredUp provides the comfort of shopping online with the insane deals of thrifting. It's super easy and fun to shop. You can save your sizes and favorite brands and filter for exactly what you want. They have so many cute things and add thousands of new items every day. Look good and do good this year with ThredUp. Go to thredup.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's thredup.com/savage. ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hi, Dan. I'm a gay male. In the wake of the Me Too movement, I just feel a bit awful about something I did when I was 15 years old. I knew that this guy who was a year older than me would get really drunk and pass out. And we went out drinking beer until he passed out, and then went to his parents' house, which they happened to be away for the weekend. And when my friend was passed out, I went and got a jar of Vaseline, that's a long time ago, and fucked his ass and came inside of his ass, and he did not feel a thing. He did not wake up. And I know a lot of people have told the story saying that it's impossible, But if you've ever been around drunks or people that drink a lot and pass out, they don't feel a thing. They don't hear a thing. They're out. And then I spend the night, and then the next day, nothing was talked about. I don't recall all the details of did I wipe his ass after, or, but I feel like I raped somebody, which I did. And I've had long relationships over the years, and I'm a normal person now. And I just feel like what I did years and years ago is awful. And I don't know where this person is. I've never seen him. I guess our friendship ended, and I didn't see him for years. I haven't seen him for like 30 years. Anyway, what do I do? How do I deal with this? I've been kind of telling the story my whole life. I was laughing for a while about it. You know what I did? Ha ha ha. I was a kid and I, you know, fucked this guy in the ass. But now I'm thinking like, this was fucking horrible and I have to live with this. So, yeah, let me know how I should deal with this.
You feel like you raped someone because you did rape someone. And I'm glad you feel awful about this now, because you should feel awful about this. You should have felt awful about this when you did it and in the years after. It's disturbing to hear you talk about when you used to share this as an amusing anecdote with friends that you raped. At age 15, you were a minor, impaired judgment, but at 15, you raped a defenseless friend. You took advantage of someone in a premeditated fashion. You knew that he would drink until he blacked out, and you went out drinking with him. I don't need to rehearse this for you. You know what you did. You recounted what you did. But the fact that it was so coldly premeditated, you went out drinking with this buddy knowing he got blackout drunk so that you could take the opportunity once he was blackout drunk to fuck his ass when he was defenseless and helpless is just incredibly disturbing. And I am glad that at this late date, you are disturbed by it, as you should be. But what do you do? It was 30 plus years ago. You don't know where this person is now. It's possible that he never knew what happened to him. But, you know, as one gay man to another gay man, you usually can tell the next morning, the morning after your ass has been fucked, that your ass was fucked, particularly if someone came inside you. And so odds are, I think, pretty good that he knew at the time, perhaps, that he was aware at the time that something happened. But your friendship continued for more years. You say you lost touch with him around age 20. So maybe he didn't know. And getting a call from you out of the blue to apologize for this thing that he may not be aware happened, or a call from you all these years later so that you could unburden yourself and apologize to him and put him in a position where he needs to offer you absolution because you feel terrible about this now, is requiring, as the kids say, emotional labor from him that you don't have a right necessarily to ask for or expect. So what do you do with these terrible, terrible feelings that you're struggling with at this moment? So inspired by the Me Too movement to assess your past behaviors and to see them in a new light. Although I have to say that I'm shocked that it took the Me Too movement coming along for you to see this for what it was. I believe that you should have been able to see that at age 15. But you didn't. And you say you feel terrible and you want to know what you can do. Well, I don't think you should contact this guy out of the blue to confess, to apologize, and then put him in a position where he feels like he has to offer you absolution. Or you let him know that this happened, and then he's traumatized to discover all these decades later that he was raped. Yeah, so I don't think you should call him. 1 in 10 victims of rape is male, according to RAIN, the Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network. Well, RAIN also runs a hotline, offers counseling, offers crisis counseling to people who've been victims of sexual assault or sexual violence. And I think making a large annual donation to RAIN, or writing RAIN into your will and leaving them a significant chunk of money upon your death, would be a good way to make amends, not to this person, because again, I don't think you should contact your victim, but make amends to the universe, to make something positive come from these new feelings of guilt and responsibility that you're struggling with, because you would be then helping other victims, male and female, of rape and sexual violence and incest who may reach out to Rain in the future because they have been on the receiving end of the kind of violence that you inflicted on this helpless teenage boy, this friend of yours, so many years ago.
Let's all assume that this is the year that you're going to up your game. And if so, you're going to need a good-looking website. Fortunately, Squarespace makes it a breeze to crank out a beautiful, professional-looking website or blog or even an online store. They have templates that were created by world-class designers that you can just drop in and it looks good right away. And they have built-in e-commerce so you can sell stuff. There's nothing to patch or upgrade. And if you need help, they have 24/7 support. You can make it yourself so easily and make it stand out with Squarespace. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 31-year-old gay man living in the Southwest. Here's my situation. When I was younger, my older brother made my childhood hell. He physically and mentally abused me all the time, always beating me up and putting me down any chance he got, and making me terrified that if I told my mother, he would make it worse. Things got a lot worse when I was 11 years old. He actually molested me. He tried to rape me. He did not succeed in doing that, but all the other things that he did to me that night definitely traumatized me. He only did the molestation that one time, but he continued to physically and mentally abuse me throughout my childhood. I suppressed that memory and the molestation for quite a while and just dealt with the other abuses. That's what older brothers do. They pick on their little brothers. Then about a year ago, everything came out. I was having nightmares, reliving that night that he molested me. Couldn't concentrate at work. It sent me into really bad depression. So I went to a therapist. And through therapy, I was able to accept what happened to me. During that time where I was trying to make myself better, I completely cut my brother out of my life. I went several months without communication with him. And then my therapist actually suggested that I write a letter to him when I was ready. So I did. And the biggest thing I put in the letter was I wanted acknowledgement for what he did to me. Or if he didn't acknowledge it, then I would tell the whole family what he did. And he wrote me back. He acknowledged what he did and he apologized. And he kind of flipped the script on me. He said when he was younger, he was also molested and bullied all the time. He pretty much said that, yeah, I had it bad, but so did he. So it's not that big of a deal. So now I kind of feel stuck. I didn't get the closure that I wanted from this. And I feel like he's saying what he did to me was not his fault because, you know, he went through it too. So now he wants to mend our relationship, and so does my mother. You know, she knows about the bullying that he put me through now, and she thinks that's the only reason why me and my brother don't talk very much. I really don't want to tell her about the molestation because I feel like that would really tear our family apart. But I really do want to put this past me, and I'm not sure if I really can mend this relationship with my brother. Should I even try to mend this relationship? Maybe go back to therapy and try to work things out? Or should I just cut him off completely?
First, I'm really sorry about how you were abused. Sibling abuse is a kind of domestic violence that's rarely discussed or acknowledged. And you were certainly the victim of that particular kind of mental, physical, and sexual violence. And I ache for you. I really do. You reached out to your brother about what he'd done to you. You contacted him. And what you say you wanted was an acknowledgement. And you really didn't get an acknowledgement. Yes, he acknowledged, he admitted, he recognized what he did. But then he mentioned, he asserted that he too had been the victim of abuse. And that's very common. It is very common for children who are being bullies or being sexually violent to have been victimized themselves. And they are inflicting on some other helpless child the kind of violence that was inflicted on them. But your brother in his letter back to you soured the acknowledgement by telling you that he was a victim too, and so it's not that big a deal. That's not taking responsibility. You wanted an acknowledgement that was about taking responsibility, and his acknowledgement was about deflection. That's not taking responsibility for what he did, even if he himself was the victim of this exact same kind of violence at the hands of some other child, adult. He has to take responsibility for what he did, for the choices he made, even as a child. It doesn't sound like he mentioned his abuse to contextualize what he did to you. He mentioned his abuse. He brought up the abuse that he suffered to rationalize what he did to you, to explain it away, to minimize it. And that was not the acknowledgement that you needed. An acknowledgement that minimized what he put you through for years and years and years, culminating in that act of sexual violence and then the other types of violence persisting after. Yeah, I can understand why you might not want to have any relationship with your brother going forward when that's the reaction you got. You didn't get an acknowledgement. You got a pushback. So what do? Well, you don't have to have a relationship with your brother. You don't have to pretend to have a relationship with your brother to please your mother. You have to ask yourself, and I think this is something you should unpack at great length with your therapist, whether you want to have a relationship with your brother or not. And if the answer is no, if the only reason you're contemplating continuing to run at this person who didn't acknowledge, deflected, rationalized, pushed back when you confronted him about the terrible things that he had chosen to do to you, yeah, you are not obligated to continue to see that person. You have to do what's best for you in this circumstance. If thinking about having an adult relationship with your brother is painful to contemplate, if continuing to work on this is something that you are doing not for yourself, if it's something that you are thinking about doing for your mother, to keep the peace in the family, to make Christmas or Thanksgiving or whatever the fuck less stressful, if those are the only reasons you're doing it, if you're doing this for other people and not for yourself, choose not to do it. As awkward as that might be for your mother, she'll have to eat it because you have to look out for your mental health and you have to get to a place, not where you can really ever put this behind you. This will be with you all your life. But you need to get to a place where it's easier for you to live and walk with this. And if in conversations with your therapist, if when you do some serious introspection, you can imagine that it's easier to walk and live with this without your brother in your life, then absolutely you have a right, even perhaps a responsibility to yourself, to cut your brother out of your life once and for all. Thanks to Away for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Away makes affordable, high-quality suitcases that charge your phone. By cutting out the middleman, Away is able to offer the perfect luggage made with high-quality materials at a much lower price. It comes in a variety of colors and four sizes. The carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large. I travel light, so I got the carry-on, and it is gorgeous. The carry-on bags feature two USB ports and a high-capacity battery that allows you to charge multiple devices on the go. Phones, tablets, laptops. So you never have to worry about a dead phone or fight for an outlet at the airport. It's ultra durable yet lightweight, and you get a smooth ride in any direction. Four 360-degree spinner wheels that won't get stuck or break. They're also theft-proof. There's a TSA-approved combination lock built in to keep your belongings safe. Even overpackers like me can fit everything they need into their Away luggage because they have an interior compression system that tightly buckles in even bulky items. Comes with a lifetime warranty. If anything breaks, Away will fix it or replace it for life. And they offer a risk-free 100-day trial period. If at any point you decide it's not for you, return it for a full refund, no questions asked. Plus, you get free shipping anywhere in the lower 48 states. So, get yourself or someone you love some new luggage and let them know that the Lovecast sent you. Away has a special offer just for my listeners. For $20 off a suitcase, go to awaytravel.com/savage and use the promo code SAVAGE at checkout. Do it, please. It helps us out at the Lovecast, and it'll help you out at the airport the next time you need to charge something. If you're considering getting some new luggage anyway, get yourself some Away. That's $20 off a suitcase by going to awaytravel.com/savage and using the promo code SAVAGE.
Greetings, everybody. I'm just wondering, sometimes my teenage girls get in the car and I'm listening to the Savage Love cast, and sometimes they pick up a little bit of information and sometimes they're like, oh, you're crazy, Mom. But I'm wondering, what do you think is a good age for teenagers to be listening to the Savage Love cast? I think you have so much great information. I'm all about them listening to it. And sometimes they're interested, sometimes they're not. I'm definitely not going to force them to listen to it. But what do you think on the appropriate age level for your content?
You know, every once in a while, someone comes up to me in the airport or in a restaurant and tells me that they've been listening to the Savage Love cast and or reading my column since they were 10 or 11 or 12 years old. And that freaks me the fuck out. I can't really record the show, and I certainly can't write the column, if I'm thinking about that reader or that listener, that prepubescent reader or listener. Because, yeah, I don't think 10, 11, 12 is an age that someone should be listening to the Love cast or reading Savage Love. 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, though, I think those kids are old enough to listen to the Savage Love cast because those kids have access to the internet and those kids know what sex is. And those kids may have seen a lot of pornography that gives them a warped idea about what sex and adult relationships are like. And the conversations we have here on the show with guests, the conversations that we have with callers about their issues and problems, I think those are beneficial. And I think 13, 14, 15-year-olds who are interested enough to seek the show out or find the column and read it are mature enough to listen to the show or read it. I don't think you should force your kid at 13, 14, 15 to listen to the show. And I remember what it was like to be 13, 14, 15 years old. You didn't want to listen to a sex show or really watch a love scene in a movie in the living room with your mom or dad in the room. It was embarrassing. So I can understand why your daughters are performing their embarrassment when they get into the car and mom is listening to that crazy smut podcast where people talk about their sex problems. Your daughters, however, if they're seeking the column or the podcast out on their own, when they're not in the car with you, they're listening to it on their own phones, I'm fine with that. I don't have a problem with that. I think that would be good. I think it would be good for young people not just to listen to my sex and relationship podcast, but to a handful of sex and relationship podcasts to get different perspectives and hear different voices. But this idea that some people have in their head that kids aren't hearing about sex, aren't thinking about sex, aren't talking to each other about sex, aren't viewing any materials online that perhaps they shouldn't be, like pornography. Yeah, that, I don't know how people get that into their heads, that kids aren't curious about sex or fascinated about sex. It's almost as if we all go through puberty and then we hit about age 25 and we completely forget what it was like to be 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years old and obsessed with sex, and often with so little information easily available to us to help us understand what we are going through or what we're going to be going through once we become sexually active. So yeah, I think kids, teenagers should be listening to my show. Like I said, a lot of adults seem to hit age 25 and forget what puberty was like and project onto kids who are currently going through puberty a kind of innocence or naivete or lack of interest in sex that certainly didn't characterize their own puberties. And adults out there who've forgotten what puberty is like, I would encourage them all, while their kids listen to the Savage Love cast, to watch Big Mouth on Netflix, which is a show about middle school students going through puberty. It is really fucking smart, and it is triggering in good ways. It helps you remember what it was like, what that time in your life was like. And some of what you'll see are kids without a lot of information, harming themselves, harming others. And some of what you'll see or reacquaint yourself with is what it was like when you were suddenly very compelled by sex, very interested in sex because of the changes you were going through, because you had a hormone monster stalking you, and to not have a lot of good information at hand, not have a lot of context for your feelings, or to be in a position where you could only get information from your peers who didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. So yes, in conclusion, teenagers should be listening to my podcast, I believe, and adults should be watching Big Mouth so they remember what those years were like, and they can then understand why it is a good idea for the teenagers that they're raising to be listening to my fucking podcast.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 21-year-old female college student, and I'm calling with a question that pertains not to me, but to my 16-year-old little brother. He had his first girlfriend this summer and would come to me for advice about sex and hooking up. Talking about it with him was a little awkward, but I was more than happy to be there for him and answer his questions, and I felt really grateful that he was comfortable coming to me for information. Fast forward to now, several months later, him and his girlfriend have broken up. I come home for winter break from college, and he tells me he is poised to have a three-way with two girls in his grade, one of whom he barely knows. Apparently, he heard through the grapevine that they were interested, who knows what that means, and somehow he communicated to them he was interested as well. I am shocked. I am in total support of group sex endeavors for consenting adults, but I'm not sure any 16-year-old needs to be engaging in these kinds of activities, especially not my brother. He's both romantically and sexually relatively inexperienced, and I'm sure the experience of a threesome would be overwhelming to him on an emotional and logistical level. Entering into a threesome also requires lots of communication among all parties about expectations, boundaries, desires, protection, consent, etc. Conversations I'm not sure if my brother is equipped to have with one person, let alone two. Most importantly, he is not emotionally stable. He's experiencing intense mood swings and bouts of depression and is not an emotionally mature kid. I want to keep lines of communication open between us, so I tried to tell him some of my concerns in a laid-back and non-judgmental way, but I didn't think it really sunk in. When I told him I could see a lot of ways this could go wrong, he replied that he didn't see anything wrong with jumping into the mix. I'm not sure what mix he's referring to, but he thinks this experience might help him gain social capital. I think the social and emotional fallout from having a three-way in high school could be disastrous for him, and it's clear to me that he's not thought out the pros and cons with a clear head. How can I talk to him about this openly, yet also firmly communicate my reservations and help him navigate the crazy land of high school hookups, temptations, confusions? I'm honestly a little bit at a loss for how to talk to him about this, but I feel it's important that I try since he's the one who's coming to me for information.
It doesn't sound like you need my advice about how to talk to your little brother about his sex life. You are talking to your little brother. You sound frustrated that you haven't been able to talk your little brother out of this. And those are two different things. You can talk to him. Lines of communication are open. He's coming to you with questions. He's sharing this with you. And you are telling him that you think it's a bad idea. You are warning him that when it comes to three-way sex, there are more complications around consent and boundaries and making sure everyone's comfortable. And there's a lot to handle. You know, negotiating all those things with one person is difficult. Balancing the needs and desires of three people is somehow infinitely more complicated. All that said, you know, I lost my virginity in a three-way when I was 15 years old, and I'm fine. I probably wasn't emotionally mature enough for it. I definitely wasn't emotionally mature enough for it. I wasn't derailed by it. I wasn't damaged by it. I didn't, however, have that three-way to earn social capital in my high school. And I think that's where you might really want to talk to your brother. If he's about to go have this sexual adventure for that reason, that is the wrong reason to have this kind of sexual adventure. If he is doing this for the bragging rights, that's a bad reason to have any kind of sex with any number of people at any age. There's only so much that you can do, however. You can share your concerns. You can hear him out. You can tell him you think it's a terrible idea and that he shouldn't do it. He still gets to make his own choices. He still gets to make his own mistakes. And that's frustrating to watch. You know, a teenager without a fully formed brain and some of the parts of the brain that aren't yet fully formed when someone is 16 years old are the chunks of the brain that game out risk and potential negative consequences. So you might want to have a conversation with him about that and be his sounding board about risk and potential negative consequences if this experience goes south or is unpleasant. But then at the end of the day, only so much you can do. You can't nail the door to his bedroom shut. You can't stop him. You can't slap the dick out of his pants and make sure it can't happen. Eventually, you're going to have to let him make his own choices and make his own mistakes and then be there for him, if indeed it does blow up or go badly, to help him process it, to help him with the fallout, if there's any fallout. But maybe there won't be any fallout. any negative fallout, just as there wasn't any negative fallout for me, really, about that three-way I lost my virginity in so many years ago. And now your tweets. Lucretia2014 tweets, "Hey, at Fake Dan Savage, I've been waiting to hear your opinion on Boy Erased on the hashtag Savage Lovecast. Such an important topic. Love the show and you. I'm sorry to say that I haven't yet seen this film. I will try to see this film and I will try to talk about it in an upcoming show." Tim Douglas tweets, "A very helpful suggestion. The caller with the boyfriend who won't use deodorant for his BO might want to look into the natural salt stick type. Deodorant can have harsh chemicals and cause painful breakouts and blisters. I can attest that the salt mineral ones work and don't have the bad side effects." And Laura Richards tweets, "I was just telling my boyfriend about the doggedy style collar, and he told me he had a friend who divorced her husband because he thought all positions but missionary were disgusting." So I guess it could happen. If you want us to read one of your tweets on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now some response calls.
Hi, Dan and crew. This is a response for the woman in episode 635 whose long-distance boyfriend laid on her that she was only going to be living with him half the time because he was going to be moving for school. First of all, I'm really sorry. You sound really distressed. Second, I think Dan was pretty much right on with everything except for the fact that if he's not living with you half the time, that means he has to live somewhere else half the time, which presumably means two rents. Maybe I'm just a cynic, but I think this guy is in it to have you split rent with him and save money. So, yes, you should definitely break this lease. Let him eat that cost of having two rents, one, to serve him a lesson for being a prick and inconsiderate, and two, yeah, you're going to have a little bit of financial pain, but consider it a down payment on getting over the emotional pain of this breakup. You are well rid of him. You can do a lot better, girl.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to episode number 635 about the caller whose friend is experiencing domestic violence. Love the show, but your advice was way off on this one. I work as an advocate who helps survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence, and I wanted to offer a different perspective. The caller's friend is not the one who's playing sick, twisted games like you suggested. That would actually be the abusive boyfriend. Abusive people are extremely manipulative and use many different tactics to control and hurt their partners. It's so common for people in abusive relationships to stay because of the extreme manipulation they experience. Even if the really bad times include almost dying, the abuser has a way of sucking their partner back in and making them feel loved and cared for. Domestic violence happens within a cycle. There's the tension-building phase, explosion phase, and rebonding phase. It sounds like that's exactly what this woman is experiencing. It can take many attempts to leave an abusive relationship before the person is able to get out, and that's not the fault of the survivor at all. It sounds like the caller was asking how to best support her friend, but Dan, your response was a heavy dose of victim blaming. I would start by offering your friend the number to a domestic violence hotline. Trained advocates can talk to her and give her the support she needs and deserves. Let her know that you are worried about her emotional and physical safety and that you are there to help her when she is ready. Supporting people experiencing domestic violence can be exhausting, and secondary trauma is real. So take care of yourself and set boundaries if you need to. Domestic violence hotlines are usually for friends and loved ones, too. Feel free to call them to process your own feelings or to brainstorm ways to best support your friend. Good luck, and I hope your friend is able to leave when she's ready.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling about the power bottom who pisses everywhere when he gets fucked by huge dicks. It made me think about squirters who I've been with and how fucking stoked I get when someone squirts, when a woman I'm with squirts. And I don't know, I think it's cool that he pisses everywhere, but maybe like drink a bunch of coconut water beforehand if he's going to take a huge cock so his piss isn't quite as yellow, because I could see that being a problem. Anyway, good luck and fuck yeah.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Happy New Year. And in the new year, we have some live shows coming up all across the country. Portland, Oregon, Vancouver, Seattle, Denver, San Francisco, Chicago, Madison, and Minneapolis. Go to savagelovecast.com and click on events for dates and tickets. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Sophie St. Thomas on Twitter at TheBowieCat. And a big thank you to Sarah from Early to Bed, Chicago's feminist sex shop. Follow them on Twitter at Early to Bed. And if you are in Chicago, drop in on them at 5044 North Clark Street. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.